Hey guys, we're back, Smart Brand Marketing. Today with me, I have Ben McAdam, and this is going to be an important conversation. So I do want you to listen in more closely than some of the other ones, because you know, we've never really talked numbers on the podcast. And you know, some of the most successful business people I know, they always say, you know, when you're going from that 6 to 7 figure or 8 figure, you know, the CFO often is a person who's going to make those moves and help you get there. And I don't have a CFO in my company, you know, but we're, you know, we're still doing that higher 6 figures usually. So it's, you know, I'm still able to kind of manage it, but I know there's no way I can get to 7 or 8 without that. And you probably can't either. That's why I got Ben on. And yeah, we're going to talk some numbers. So get ready. What's up, man?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I actually heard in the DC, which is a group I'm a part of, someone's like, "Man, you got to talk to Ben. Like, we talk numbers, and he changed my life." And I was like, "Okay, I'll get Ben on the podcast. How about that?"
Awesome.
So yeah, there's one thing I want to ask you. A lot of the listeners are around that, you know, high 5 figure to low 6 figure range, right? So First, I would like to kind of have you go into what numbers and what things from your perspective are important in that range before we go into what needs to happen to go above that.
Sure. So one of the things that gets the audience up to that point, the high 5, low 6, is a lot of hustling. Just trying to get sales any way they can, trying to get the work done themselves often. And hustle is good. That's one of the big things you need to keep an eye on, your revenue number, the amount of sales dollars that are coming in, and you know, the money that's actually coming in is definitely the number one. Making sure that you have enough money to pay your bills is usually a matter of going out and getting another sale. So like the key thing up until, you know, low to mid 6 figures, the key number you're always focusing on is sales. Apart from that, you need to be starting to think about, okay, if I want to grow this bigger, I need to make sure it's got the right foundations in place so that it works on a bigger scale. There's a whole lot we'll go into a little bit later in the 6 to 7 part, but you need to start thinking about those at the high 5, low 6 figures of revenue range, because some of them might take a little while to put in place and you might need to make some drastic changes. So it's good to start doing that before there's a lot of volume and a lot of things happening in the business. Does that make sense?
It does. There's one thing I would want to address here too. You know, I always say you can hustle your way to, you know, 6 figures. That's you know, not hard. But this is the problem which I see happen often with a lot of the listeners and with myself at the moment, because we're pretty much a high-end boutique right now. We do the sales and I do some of the fulfillment. And I know a lot of listeners are thinking like, man, like this boom and bust, you know, which happens with all these types of businesses. Like if you have a fencing company, you know, often the guy who sells it is going to be the one helping put up the fence, which limits how much you can grow, right? And, you know, the next step for our business right now is we're trying to figure out how to sell things again, which, you know, in the course marketing space, which we don't have to fulfill. So I don't have to fulfill, like I'll have someone else do it. And then the challenges of, you know, the ease of work, because, you know, having something very complicated is going to be hard to fulfill. And then just the margins, because then it's like, you know, we're more of a, like I'm more in sales again, but not in the fulfillment part. But what I find is, you know, this gets so tricky because most of us do the sales and fulfillment, and you know, the numbers are very different when you look at that. Like, oh, I just got to make sure I cover my cost and have profit. Then if someone else is fulfilling it, and then it's like, you know, these margins, we're all working on like small margins then.
Exactly. And that's the right word. And this is one of those things I was mentioning you need to start working on for that 6 to 7 figure range. Margins, for people who don't know, just in case, is the difference between the price of the thing you're selling and the cost of the thing you're selling. Not any of your overheads like your rent and your bookkeeping fees and your insurance or even your marketing. It's just the cost of, like, if you're selling a product, it's the cost of the all the raw materials, the manufacturing, and the shipping it around the world. If you've got a service, then it's the cost of whoever's providing the service to the client. And getting the gap between them, or the margin between the price and the cost, right, is like the 80-20 of profitability, I usually say. Because if you can't get that core piece of your business right, then nothing you do elsewhere in your business will be able to save it. Like a common thing people will try and do to fix a low cash balance in their bank account is they'll go out and they think they just need to sell more each month.
Right.
But if you got your margins wrong, selling more will actually kill your business faster. So it's really important to get that right.
Yeah, and I've seen that. You know, like I've often said no to another custom job, you know, even though it's going to pay a lot, is because if I can't fulfill it and I can't really have some people I know on it, I know I'm going to have to hire very smart people that can replace me, and that's probably going to cost me more in some instances than the actual job itself that we'll get, you know. So yeah, it's very important to know this. What do you think is a healthy margin for a business where you're not doing the fulfillment?
I usually like to say that if you can try and start with the right number in the first place, even when it's just you and you're a freelancer, so that you are using the right price, you're testing the right price out on the market. And if you find that nobody will want you to do the work at that price, it means that you probably can't scale that business, and maybe you need to try a different market or package things differently. So starting from scratch, even when you don't have someone else doing the fulfillment, is pretty important. But to answer your question a bit more directly, it's more of a ratio. So the cost being a third or less of the price, or to think about it another way, you take your cost and you multiply it by at least three to get your price. So whichever way you want to look at it, there's like a rule of three happening there. And I find if the businesses that get that right, they have plenty of money left over for marketing. So there's plenty of leads, and signing them up is not a problem. There's plenty of money left over for managers when the business gets bigger. There's plenty of money left over to pay the owner a decent amount, so the owner doesn't have to do the work to get paid. They can pay somebody else to do it. And there's a lot of money left over for growth projects and just basically screwing things up in your business, and you'll still have a cash balance there to kind of get you out of trouble. So it's really important to get at least that rule of three happening with the margins.
So the rule of three is that if I'm charging, let's say, $1,000, then let's say maybe $900, just to make it easy, because it's a rule of three, $900, then $300 should be left over, or $300 should be used to complete the job?
Yeah, $300 or less should be used to complete the job.
So you're actually looking at around like 60% margins.
A lot of people look at it different ways.
Yeah.
That's why I usually say it's the price divided by the cost, or the cost divided by the price, whichever way you want to look at it, up or down, have that rule of three there. And the majority of it is profit for you, not going to the cost of providing the product or service.
Okay, but that's why I'm asking. So just so everyone can kind of hear your perspective on what's healthy in a business, right? So if you were looking at like $100, right? $100 comes into a business. How would you break down the percentages so that it's healthy, right? So how much does the marketing usually cost from that? How much is the fulfillment? We'll say that's 30%. Just so people have an idea, right? How much to take home, how much to put into marketing, how much should be going for my overhead, which is like apartments. With $100, I think it's an easy way to kind of visualize it.
Sure. So $100 coming in, $33 or less would go to delivering the product or service, like we just talked about. Somewhere between 5 and 15% for the marketing. If you're in a very competitive niche, or you're starting up, or you want to grow rapidly, then you'd be looking at 15%. If you're in a mature business, or you don't really need to put in as much money to marketing to get a sale, then you might be more towards the 5% end. 10% is a good average for most people to be spending on marketing. And I usually find a lot of the businesses that are having trouble with sales aren't spending anything on marketing. Like, well, there's your problem. There's nothing wrong with your salesperson or your sales technique. is that you haven't warmed people up enough. You haven't got the right leads. Go spend some money on marketing and we'll talk again. So out of that 100, we've got 33 for the cost of the service or product. We've got 5 to 15 for marketing. Ideally, in a mature business that isn't growing, you'd be looking 20% for profit. So that's not spent on any other overheads or expenses. Mm-hmm. But I do caution that, you know, that's a mature business. Like if you're growing or you're reinvesting in it, then a lot of people, when I say 20%, they're like, oh, I can't do that. There's no way. So don't panic if you're focusing on growth. The 20% profit isn't key. But those are probably the main ones. And the remainder left over is for overheads. It's up to you and how profitable your business is and what industry you're in and what business it is as to whether your pay comes out of the overheads or whether it comes out of that 20% profit figure that I mentioned. I usually like to say that you should be paid for the work you do that you'll later replace with an employee, and then you, the owner, should get a return on this investment, just as if you'd put some money in the bank, you'd expect to get some interest for it. Yeah. If you're investing your time and money in a business, you should expect to get a return on it, as well as being able to pay yourself for the actual employee type work that you're doing in the business. Does that make sense?
It does. Let me ask you this, since you spoke about replacing yourself, and there's a lot of listeners right now who are working pretty much by themselves with just like a VA or a helper, right? So a lot of these companies will just have, you know, helpers come in. Like if someone's running a, like flipping houses or something, they would just, you know, they would be the main person doing it, but there's just helpers coming in. Who is the first person to actually hire as someone that will help with the business? Because I've had different answers on this one.
Yeah, there's, I think the most common thing that people tend to do if they haven't got any advice, the most intuitive answer that the people think to themselves, they come up with themselves, is hire an assistant to take care of the low-level tasks that either annoy you or that aren't as valuable. And so that's why a VA is often the first hire, particularly for the like online location independent businesses that we often come across. But I don't think that's quite the right hire. If you want to be a self-employed person or a self-employed professional, then, you know, say like a doctor or an accountant or a lawyer, the way they do it is they offload the least valuable stuff first. They'll hire a receptionist, then they'll hire a junior. Then they'll gradually hire increasing levels of seniority that frees them up to do the most valuable, highest billable work. But if you actually want to own a business that runs by itself that gives you freedom, then you shouldn't be treating it like a way to enable you to work harder or enable you to work better. The first hire should be, if you're a service business, you deliver a service, then your first hire should be someone that can deliver that service for you. Or if you're a product business, it's like the fulfillment part is the first thing that you should hire away, because there's a lot of other things that you as a business owner need to do and need to focus on, and getting out of fulfillment is a massive weight off your mind. So that then you can focus on things like marketing, which then brings in more revenue. You can focus on the marketing and the sales rather than get caught up in fulfillment. Yeah, I think I'll leave it there. I won't go off on another tangent for now. But yeah, my answer would be don't do what people normally do and hire a VA first. Hire fulfillment first.
Yeah, and this is when, you know, I asked you about the ease of, you know, what you're actually fulfilling and the margins, because, you know, for some businesses like mine at the moment, you know, this high-end boutique, it's almost impossible to you know, have healthy margins if I get someone else to do fulfillment. So then it's just figuring out kind of what's popular now, the productized service, right? So something that you can just keep delivering in the same way and fashion to every customer. And then it's very easy to make that, you know, as a system, because it's the same thing, right? If you're playing with custom stuff, it becomes very difficult unless you just have really good clients, you know, and it's sometimes, you know, sometimes difficult. With courses, it's difficult to have these, you know, huge paydays where, you know, you can, you know, there's a lot of mid. And at that point, I'm losing money, right? So I need to be in fulfillment. So it does depend on the business. But for a lot, yeah, you can replace yourself. Like, cause if you have a company that's building fences, like, you know, it's not rocket science. You're putting up a fence. It's not really, I mean, you can say it's custom, but what's custom is the shape or, you know, the some of the elements, but it's not really what you're doing. You're just putting a fence in. With marketing, it's like there's so many different components, right? Like, are we starting from scratch? Are we doing an industry that we're used to? Are we building a funnel? Are we doing the remarketing? Is the remarketing in place? Do we just need to fill the gaps, which are losing someone money? There's just so many different things. It's often up to, you know, just the experience, you know, which I have, that we can, you know, I have my team fixing things once I tell them what they need to fix. But getting that person that can actually think through, it's like, well, if you know all this stuff, you'd probably have your own business.
just on that last point, that's a common thing that we think because we're all entrepreneurs, and that's what we would do. But we're the minority. Most people don't want the responsibility of owning a business. And in fact, some of the most capable, experienced, and amazing employees that a lot of my clients have are people who tried working for themselves and didn't like it. But they've got that broad range of expertise and they know what the priority of the business owner is. So now that, you know, they're an employee, they're really appreciate being an employee. They've got a broad set of skills and they're really, really helpful. So I would say don't necessarily assume that the person you need to replace yourself with will want to run their own business. There are quite a lot of entrepreneurial employees or intrapreneur, I think I've heard the term. Another point I want to mention, you said a little bit earlier about custom is hard to replace people who have the fulfillment, and that's the appeal of productized services. I'm a big fan of productized service. I grew one and sold it to my co-founder a number of years ago. They're fantastic things, and what makes them work really well is the fact that you have a particular type of customer and you have a 80 or 90% standardized solution, so there's only like 10 or 20% of customization, but the vast majority of this solution is standardized that fixes a particular problem that particular market has. And you can make customized services work by making them a little bit more productized, by narrowing down the particular market and narrowing down the particular problem they have and the solution that you get them to. You can, instead of like 90% standardized like a productized service would be, you could have it like 75% customized, and then you don't quite need the same brains type employees that can think for themselves and do strategy and improvise. You don't quite need the same level. You still might need some smart people for those little extra bits that are customized, but it definitely helps. Part of the reason why I got into the productized service is because I was doing the non-productized version of it and couldn't see a way that I could hire people to do it unless I hired a clone of myself.
Right.
But once I narrowed down with my business partner at the time, once we narrowed down the particular type of client and the service that they most needed help with, it became a lot easier to productize that, and we could hire people who weren't clones of us, didn't need to be like degree qualified, experienced chartered accountants and CPAs. They could just get a bookkeeper in this particular instance. So you can still make a customized service work, so long as it's not too customized.
Yeah, that's really the challenge, right? Just seeing how much do I want to simplify things, you know. But we're definitely getting there. We've had these talks like almost every single day now, and when we're trying different things. But it's, you know, it's something I do love. I love that idea, you know, because it's the easiest one to scale out of the ones I can think of, you know, other than if, like, before when I had the book publishing or something, that was super simple. because once we had, you know, the more books we put out, the more we scaled. It was just, you know, it was a numbers game. And that happens often with products. But if you're actually not selling products but time, I think productize is the only real way to go. So let's go into the next part. If you're moving from the six figures, which is like, okay, I can't be a hustler anymore. I need to become a business owner now, basically. Mm-hmm. and moving to seven or eight figures, what happens then? What are we looking at from the numbers perspective?
Yeah, those margins become even more important. If you don't have that rule of three that we talked about earlier, if you don't have that in place, you'll find that as your revenue grows, you'll be working harder and harder. And even if you hire someone to help, that won't reduce your workload. And most people kind of get stuck there and they think, oh, business is hard. This is just what I have to put up with. They don't realize that there's something wrong that can be fixed and that needs to be fixed. So pricing, the way you price your packages is really, really important. And making sure that you're not overspending with the cost to deliver that particular product or service. But you also need to start thinking a bit more about the overheads, the other places that you're spending money, because as you grow, you have a bigger team or you have more products, like you need more physical space to keep them somewhere. Like your team needs a desk somewhere, or your products need a bigger warehouse, or, you know, maybe the fulfillment center you've been using isn't working anymore, or maybe your team's growing to the point where they need a manager, and or the team needs to meet up for a team retreat. So as you scale, there's these extra costs that start coming up. Now, you don't necessarily have to have your team somewhere. I'm a big proponent of having a remote team, and I work from home myself. But there's still like extra software licenses, and there's these extra challenges that come up, and you need to have those margins right so there's money left over to deal with those challenges and to fund those extra expenses. And it's finding that as you get bigger, there's more moving parts in the business. You can't do everything yourself, but you also then you get to the next level where you can't manage everything yourself. And there needs to be some level of managers or supervisors, or you might have a lead team member, not necessarily a manager, but they help the other team members of their level. You need to start bringing them in, which means that you need to be able to fund them. But if you can fund them, it then allows you to focus on continuing to invest in marketing, because you can't, unless you're selling really high value packages, you can't hustle seven figures. Unless you're selling like, you know, six figure packages,
right?
You know, you get 10 of those will work, but if you're selling small things, then you need systems, you need marketing, and you need the margins to be able to support that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, especially, you know, when you said that hustling part, I find when it comes to doing high-end stuff and when the owner needs to do fulfillment, and I spoke with a lot of friends about this too, between five and seven clients is all you can take at one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the owner just, you know, cannot think of anymore. I think it's about just our attention too. And we can't focus on any more than between four and seven things at once. Right?
Yep.
And I found that when I spoke with some psychologists too, they just said this is a normal thing, you know. That's why when the Tetris was designed, I think there was only seven figures, shapes. And that's what made it possible for us to kind of have that twitch response, right, when we played the game and just got so into it, is because the mind could still handle it. If it was eight or nine, it wouldn't work, because we just, you know, we would have to keep thinking like, oh, what's this shape? Like, it's just our minds wouldn't, you know, and that's why that game did so well. When you spoke about margins too, I was reading a book on Nintendo, how it came to power, and they spoke about Atari too. You know, probably some listeners remember the Atari too. And they said that Nintendo was so agile that each employee was pretty much worth like $4 or $5 million at the high point. Where Atari was a bunch of just stoners and hippies, and they had so many vice presidents that the overhead grew so big that, you know, when the smallest problem happened, like the company just started unraveling, where Nintendo was just, you know, they had so much money in the bank, they could fight almost any fight. And you know, these were big companies, and you know, the when you said margins, it then and you know, it's become so important. They were so important with those two, because the one with the better margins survived.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like I said earlier in the episode, if you get your margins right, you'll have a lot of money to throw at problems. Like you said, Nintendo did. And definitely, like moving into talking a little bit about productivity, which is kind of like the numbers that don't appear on the financial statements, but a CFO can still help with. And like Tim Ferriss in the 4-Hour Workweek had that system for productivity. It was for each task, you think about it, and can it be eliminated? Like that's the first step, is eliminate the task if it doesn't need to be done. If it does, can it be automated? Because computer systems are usually more accurate, more faster, and more cheaper than people. If it can't be eliminated or automated, then you delegate it. You have someone else do it. And if all of those fail and you have to do it yourself, then you give yourself a really short deadline to do it. Parkinson's law is that the more time you give yourself, the more work it'll be, or the more work it'll seem like. So he had that fantastic productivity system, and a lot of us have read the book, but maybe have forgotten that bit. And doing all of that can really help, because one of the big costs as a company goes from six figures to seven figures becomes team. It doesn't matter what you're selling. Somewhere in there, you have to have half a dozen employees. You have to transition to a half dozen employees or contractors. And you need to be able to manage the productivity, making sure that, you know, for the money that you're spending and the time that you're investing in them, your company is actually getting some reasonable amount of value from that. So the Tim Ferriss framework is one that I use with a lot of my clients. And the eliminate step is the surprising winner. That can save quite a lot of money. A lot of times, if you're growing, your business will be changing. You'll find that you don't need certain people anymore, or they're wasting their time on things that aren't valuable anymore, or that your clients don't care about. So it can be useful to go through that every 6 or 12 months as you're on that stretch between six figures and seven figures, and even beyond that. Go through, do a little productivity audit, Tim Ferriss style, and save yourself some money that you can reinvest elsewhere or use to fend off Atari hippies.
Yeah, it's true. That's smart. What I found too, and this is a fun exercise, it's not going to be fun for a lot of people once you realize what's happening, but it's still a fun exercise, is if you're doing something custom, sell it, and then just say, I'm not doing any of this myself, which means you need to hire someone to do each piece and see if you can actually bring people in within the cost, right? Just even if you don't make a profit, because you'll quickly realize that you're probably not able to scale ever with those services, you know? But just run an exercise. It's like, okay, if I just put that constraint that I cannot touch this project, but it needs to get done, how much is it really going to cost? And it'll probably be a little more at first, because, you know, if you hire people in, you know, the costs come down just because it's a, you know, numbers game, like with scaling a little bit too, like they'll be working on the similar projects, but in the beginning they won't. But still, you'll often see like, man, I lost a lot of money on this project. Like, oh my God, like I have to do everything myself, or I need to change something. And then it's the thing like, well, what's next? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, you have to pay yourself for the work you do, so that you can see whether you're still profitable after that or not. And if not, maybe something needs to change. Maybe your pricing needs to go up. But it's definitely a trap that people get into as they move from the hustler or the freelancer to actually building a business with a team and getting, you know, from six to seven figures, is that they need to also include a reasonable hourly rate for themselves and make sure that everything still works.
And the one thing I find a lot of business people don't actually know is how much they're worth per hour, right? So they don't actually pay themselves for the work, so they don't have a number, which is interesting, right? Like, it's very hard to replace yourself or even feel good about yourself if you don't know how much you're worth. It's like, you know, most of them are just like, I don't know, I'm just working all the time.
Yeah.
And it's fine, but how much is each hour worth, right? Like, that's a very important number to have. Like with me now, like if I go to a movie theater and the movie's boring, I will fall asleep or walk out because I know my how much the hour is worth to me. I'm like, look, I'm not only wasting yep. $15 on the movie, there's also a couple hundred dollars here, which, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's,
absolutely.
It makes you look at everything differently.
Yeah. There's a couple of different ways, depending on which business book you read or which blog post you read or podcast you listen to, there's a couple of different ways of working out how much your time is worth. For some people will suggest you do it in the way of, okay, how much profit is my business making, and I'll add whatever wage or anything else I'm paying myself, or, you know, co-working space or food that I'm paying through and expensing through the company. Add all that up, divide it by the number of hours that I worked during that period, and think, okay, well, that's the hourly rate I earned. And then focus on increasing that number. And anything that's lower than that number, that you can pay someone less than that number to do, you get rid of that thing off your plate. That's one way to look at it, kind of calculating your effective hourly rate. For me, I like to suggest that you always keep in mind the market rate for the particular task that you're doing at the time. So if you are answering phones or answering simple customer service emails, you say, all right, how much could I hire someone to do that for? $5 an hour from the Philippines? Should I be doing that, or should I instead be working on our marketing campaigns, or should I instead be saving the time for sales calls, or should I instead be working on product development or improving the processes in the business, which is worth a lot more to the company than $5 an hour? And that's another thing that changes in between 6 to 7 figures. I said earlier, you have to get a team, but you also have to be a lot more conscious about you, the business owner, your time, your energy, because there are things the business needs you to do. Otherwise, it won't scale and it can't grow any further, and it could even tear itself apart up at those levels if you, the business owner, aren't focusing on the things you need to focus on and are instead doing things that you could pay some overseas virtual assistant to handle for you. So that becomes a bit of a surprising thing. Like the hustler is always at the coalface. They're doing everything themselves and overseeing everything themselves, and they're used to making sure everything's done to their standard and the clients are happy and the clients see them, and they need to move back and move away because the business won't be able to grow or it'll break if they're focusing too much on all those little things. Or the business owner will break and burn out because there's too many things for them to focus on. As they get to about 7 figures, they won't actually be able to be looking at every email that goes out or every interaction with a customer. They'll just have to trust that it's going well and find some ways to keep an eye on it at scale, but not every single individual email, for example.
Yeah, and this is the problem I see when, you know, people say build a personal branding type company, which means that you know, the cost, you can raise the prices basically because of your personal brand, your social proof, things like that, versus having a faceless company that maybe doesn't charge as much, but, you know, there's no one to actually sort of be responsible, that one person, right? So it's like a whole company that's responsible, and then, you know, this owner doesn't feel like, man, my face is on everything, like I need to look at every little piece because it's just a company. Where, you know, mm-hmm. in these personal branding businesses, like if your face sold it well at the end, you kind of feel like, man, like if this doesn't come delivered as beautifully as I want it to, like people are going to talk about me, not really anyone else that delivered it. It's like your face sold this thing.
Yeah, I've had a couple of clients who've been in that situation of where they don't have enough time or energy left to take on any more clients, and so therefore they can't handle a higher level of revenue, therefore their business can't grow. They say, what am I going to do? How do I get past this? Do I just have to sleep less and work 100 hours instead of 80? Something that helped them is, instead of thinking about the customer paid me to do the work, you think the customer paid me to make sure they get the result. So like you're responsible for them getting the result. So you can build a system that will get them that result, and it's your responsibility to oversee it and make sure that, you know, the wheels don't fall off and that it actually works as it's supposed to. But you're not responsible for doing everything. And you will have to change some language in your marketing and your initial pre-sales conversations and communications with the client. So, you know, you might have been saying, you know, I'm amazing and I'm going to do everything for you and therefore it will be amazing. A lot of people will, you know, especially if they've been a freelancer and they've been working on Upwork or a similar site where they get like 5-star reviews for them, you need to transition away from selling yourself like that and saying instead, I'm going to make sure you get this result. I'm going to get you that result. I'm going to make sure you get that result. I've put together a team or I've put together a system that follows my particular process and I'll be monitoring that to make sure that it works and that you get this X result. But you do need to say, you still can have a personal brand without you having to do the work with just a little bit of change of language and changing your own, the way you think about things. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. The first thing I did is in my communication during sales and proposals, I always used we instead of I. That's the only mm-hmm. thing I've changed. And some people cut onto that and like, we, who is we? And you know, I'm like, oh, I'm glad you asked. So I'll mention the team. And then sometimes I'll just get a question like, okay, so is this your team or are you outsourcing it like everyone else? I'm like, no, this is my team. And that solved all of those issues, right? Because people know, like, I did say we. I'm not going to be doing all of this myself, just so you know.
Yes.
But it was the only
thing. You're going to start talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just for my own sanity and protection. And I just wanted in emails to make sure that we said we always, you know, not just me. I don't want to sell anything myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. More we, more team, more system, more process. No, I.
Yeah.
Get rid of I and me. None of that.
So that was my solution. All right, Ben. This has been great. Thank you for coming on. Where can people find you?
My website is profitscollective.com. And you can find me on Facebook under that as well and on LinkedIn. But the website's good. I've got a free exercise there. I will leave you in suspense as to what it is, but it's very helpful for finding some extra profits quickly.
Awesome. Loving it. Thanks for coming on again.
No worries. Thanks, Tom.
Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.